This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Sharp Money, the big guy like that one, as we welcome you in to start a new week. How we doing? I'm Patrick Maher, of course, the Prince Amal Shaw, back in Vegas at the South Point. Dustin Sweetelson, a.k.a. the big guy, a.k.a. Bitter Sweetelson. I would just say this as we start anew for the week here on Sharp Money. Just stay out of his way. He is in a cantankerous. You would think that he didn't take a month off. My gosh, he was gone for the month of July. He comes back. He's pissed at everybody. I don't know Amal Shaw as they say hi to you and start a new week. There's plenty I want to get into. We're going to go through the Big 12. We've got Ryan Harris, Westwood One, talking Notre Dame. We've got Brett Coleman, who does better than anybody, talking NFL. Get to him. Zach Barnett, talking college football as well. We're going to go back to the guide, which is absolutely killing it. You can find it at vsin.com/subscribe. We've got day baseball coming up in about an hour and 10 minutes. My time, of course, the Dodgers close out the four-game set in San Diego, where they took 2 of 3 in a high-scoring series down at Petco over the weekend. And as I say hi to Amal Shaw, I don't know if you've caught on with the bitterness from Sweetelson, but it's been a little dicey as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I can't necessarily completely sign off on that, but I'm sure he was feeling a little bit this way simply because his guy, Tim Anderson, we realize has a complete glass jaw. And I'll tell you, if you missed that over the weekend, we'll get into it a little bit. I don't know what your feeling on it is, but if you haven't heard the Tom Hamilton call, we're going to have it for you. I can't wait to hear it once again.
Yeah, we're going to get to it in a bit. That was, again, you two are kumbaya, ebony and ivory, the Caucasian and Indian version. So
that's a great song, by the way, Stevie Wonder.
I can't really cause any fraction between the two of you, but I'll just say this. You know, I came back. I'm obviously rested. I feel good. After having the month of July off, I came back thinking that the vibes were going to be great. And I would say the vibes are tremendous my way. The vibes are great with the Prince coming off of Showtime. I would say the one anchor of the outfit would be one, Dustin Sweetelson. Would you like to defend yourself, big guy?
Well, as the heart and soul of this show, I take offense to everything you said. Here's what I'd say. I saw a great quote, Micah Parsons, and he said, I would love to disappear to Africa one day, and all I can think about is since I saw that quote is take me with you, bro. I want to go too. I want to get away from everyone. Everyone's bothering me. Everyone who calls me, everyone who texts me, everyone who emails me. I don't know what it is, but every single thing that happens around me is annoying me, and I think it's everyone else, but now that I say it out loud, it might actually be me.
I believe he said to me on the phone today, everybody's annoying me, including you. You're an idiot also. So nobody is spared. Everybody is on the chopping block with the big guy speaking. Okay, go please. Please. I want to hear it.
I just want to say, I guarantee you, Micah Parsons and Dustin Sweetelson, neither of them have been to Africa based on that statement.
How about that duo? Can you imagine Micah Parsons? Dustin just talking his ear off, talking about his accomplishments at Valdosta, all the radio, talking about taking over programming at DraftKings. Like, Micah Parsons would freaking jump out of the car or the airplane by the time they got to Africa, if we're being honest. Fair, big guy?
Shout out to Toto, though.
It rains down in Africa. Great song.
That song is lit. We can't play it because of rights, but I'd love to play it for the next 2 hours and 57 minutes. Now, Amal mentioned, let's just have a little fun to start the show. We've got plenty to do, including, you know, I don't know if you consider them a fringe playoff contender, and that is Notre Dame, Amal Shaw. Just quickly, it's going to come down to 3 games, and you know it. It's going to come down to home September 23rd against Ohio State. October, they're going to get USC at home, and then they go to Clemson November 4th. That's it. Hartman's 6 years in. He's going to be fine at the quarterback position. They're deep at running back, wide receiver questions, new coordinator, year two of the head coach in Freeman. Fringe, we're going to get to it later, but just a quick thought. Fringe on Notre Dame as far as playoff.
I think it'll be tough because you mentioned the road game at Clemson. USC, they obviously have an opportunity in that game at home, but two of their 3 biggest games are at home. I'm just not buying the Irish yet. And this is part of the problem with college football right now. You look at it, we're going to include LSU in the conversation, which we already did about the SEC. The Big 12, maybe if Texas wins at Alabama, USC is a potential team, Utah a little bit of an outlier. But I would say Notre Dame probably is somewhere between 10 and 15 in that pecking order to make the playoffs. I don't see them doing it. However, if they beat Ohio State, I think they've got a great shot. Because they're going to play an elite offensive team in USC. They're going to play an elite defensive team in Clemson. And then I think Ohio State's very, very good on both sides of the ball. I don't think they're elite on either side.
Okay, you're going to get the Big 12. You're also going to get independent. You're going to get Notre Dame coming up here on Sharp Money. Amal Shah, the pugilist of the three, mentioned at the onset. Let's go over the weekend a little bit. And Jose Ramirez and Tim Anderson. Now, this was Ali Frazier. I mean, the way they squared up was hilarious. Both looked good squaring up. Hands were up. You know, I would say Anderson looked a little bit more confident going into it, but then just an absolutely, people say it was a looping right from Jose Ramirez, and I don't know if there's a more, we're talking Guardians now. You're saying, yes, big guy, get the hell out of here. It was pretty straight for a baseball player. Most uneducated or not necessarily sophisticated boxers, Amal Shah, you know this, they're just going to throw looping. We can get to Nate Diaz v. Mr. Paul over the weekend. Most are going to throw looping shots. Now, it was looping, but it was on a straight trajectory for a baseball player. And when you say that Jose Ramirez absolutely stole Tim Anderson, I mean, look, 10 minutes after, Anderson couldn't keep his footing. He was on that wobbly boot like he was out there having White Claws with the big guy.
I'll tell you what, I know one thing. Tim Anderson will not be on the post-retirement circuit of fighting former YouTube people. I mean, he went down quick. I couldn't believe it. It didn't look
Dude, it was square on the jaw, though. I mean, that was a flush shot.
I'm looking at the replay. Oh, well, you know what? I just saw the best angle. It was a good shot. I can tell you right now, if Bud Crawford hit him, Tim Anderson never gets up again.
Well, the issue is Tim Anderson decided we're going to fight. Like, Jose Ramirez was just kind of
jawing. That's what I'm saying.
Can we...
Out of nowhere, Tim Anderson just goes, Dukes up, let's go.
Can we give the umpire some credit? Look, he tried to play peacemaker, and he's like, you know what? Have at it, boys. I'm out. There's no reason to get hit as an innocent bystander here, and he just properly stepped out of the way.
Yo, he put the Anderson had them Dukes up like he had been training for this moment his whole entire life. And he got, I think he even had a body shot. Boom, boom, body shot.
He looked like the Notre Dame logo.
Ramirez was absolutely falling over, dip flying all over the place. Shout to Zinn, who used to sponsor us. We'll take you back. And next thing you know, this roundhouse right. Maul, you're watching it right now. To say that it wasn't square on the jaw, if you get hit like that on the jaw, you're going down.
No. I saw a different angle. He definitely got him square on the jaw. Initially, I was like, I thought he took a dive. Well, I literally thought he took a dive initially I saw it.
You don't have issues with Ramirez putting his head down and tucking away and swinging spanky wide?
Look.
It wasn't that bad.
Here's the rules of a fight. There are no rules. The job is to survive in advance, and he did exactly that. Tim Anderson will not be moving on to the round of 32.
Well, I'll tell you who enjoyed it, and a legend, Tom Hamilton, on the Guardians call. He all of a sudden went to Showtime with Amal Shah. I mean, a baseball – Tom Hamilton was there for a fight, and a baseball game broke out. He could not wait for Jose Ramirez and Tim Anderson to square off, and here's how it sounded.
Here it comes. A swing and a smash to first by the diving Vaughn. Down the right field line. Kicks into the corner. Ramirez on his way to second. Head first slide. Safe and in to score is Jimenez. And another hustle double. Right over the bag at first. Now Hosey and Anderson square off. They're fighting. They're swinging. Down goes Anderson. Down goes Anderson.
That is freaking legendary. Down goes Anderson. Down goes, and he did go down, fellas. I mean, it was almost like he was out on his feet, Amal. And that's when you know you've landed a solid, just flush punch. When he's out on his face, he goes back. And then I think it was Abreu and some of Anderson's teammates that tried to like aid him off the field, but Anderson was still peacocking. That's what the big dog. That's what the big guy does when he starts talking about his coworkers to me on the phone. He starts peacocking a little bit. Anderson was still peacocking, trying to get at Ramirez. He didn't want any of that smoke. He couldn't even stand up. He could not. I mean, he was out on his feet. That was great.
I'll tell you one thing though that was surprising with Anderson. You know, one of the biggest mistakes you see people in a street fight make is they never keep their hands up to protect themselves. So when he immediately threw his glove down and he had his hands up, I said, oh, this guy's got some experience fighting. just simply based on where he put his hands immediately. And next thing you know, this guy goes down. I can't wait till the White Sox road game, and I'm waiting for the public address announcer to be like, coming into the plate, second baseman, or excuse me, shortstop. He's at second or shortstop. Yeah, he was over by second base over there. But anyway, coming into the plate, second base or shortstop, glass jaw, Tim Anderson. I mean, that guy went down faster than I've seen anybody. Even Jose Bautista at least got squared up by Rougned Odor when he took a shot. He didn't go down like this guy went down like a bag of cement when the mob drops you in the Hudson.
He looked like that dude on Punch Out. If you got him in the stomach at the perfect angle, he just starts skating backwards until he just fades into the ring. You guys know who I'm talking about?
I could only get past
Mike Tyson's Punch
Out. I could only get past Glass Joe. I couldn't get past anybody else.
Well, yeah, it was something bull. Kevin just said it.
Bald bull. And don't forget Soda Popinski.
Anytime he showed a little weakness in that defense of his stomach, he just poked it in there and boom, punch out.
Dustin, you don't appreciate how great of a pull that was right there. That's a little before your time.
I had to look it up. I remember the cartoon figure. I remember Bald Bull, and he's a scary looking dude. I normally love these fights. I actually felt bad for Tim Anderson because it's been a bad year for Tim Anderson. He's not having a good time, and that didn't help. Although it might have helped him forget about some of it.
I just love the comment I saw on social media. Somebody said, Jackie Robinson would have never gone down that easily.
You two sleep on the impromptu, down goes Anderson, down goes Anderson. That was freaking great. Well, he's smiling a little bit. I saw him trying to Google, but it's hard to Google with cranky fingers. The big guy is back, just a smidge. When we return, you know who's gone? U.S. Women's National Team. You know who's not? Messi. Big 12 and more. Also, day baseball. Just getting started. Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Shout to producer Liz with the countdown. Great question at the town hall today. Len Mead, absolutely killed. Len Mead at those town halls is like JFK versus Nixon. Nobody stands a chance. Everybody's sweating. Len Mead's up there with his tan, looking like Amal Shaw. Okay, here's what I want to tell you, and this is important, all right? Power ratings, picks, previews, predictions, pro, as it become a pro, a VSiN pro, the subscriptions are going crazy. Now, one thing you may not know is if you want to get to our splits, you got to pay for it. The splits, everybody has them minimized right there on your screen. You got to get them. VSiN.com/subscribe for as low as $19. But you get the college football betting guide. You get the NFL betting guide. You get the tools. You get the picks every single day. But also the betting splits. Very important part of your arsenal. VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. Okay, boys, as we welcome you back. Start up a great week here on Sharp Money. I'm Patrick Maher. Hope you had a nice weekend. I want to get to Messi. I actually do want to get to Nate Diaz and Jake Paul, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, the cranky one. But we do have day baseball. Let's get to it. You can set me up on the number. This number open, it's steamed up with the Padres. And the Padres stink. We'll get to them. But I think it's Seth Lugo and $1.40, somewhere around there. I mentioned it. The Dodgers took 2 of 3 over the weekend. They're 7-2 on the series over their division rivals. This is the last matchup on a Monday getaway day at Petco for the year. We'll have more games between these two at Dodger Stadium. However, this one, Gonsolin, Amal, you and I were discussing it, struggled over his last 8 starts. However, against a very, you know, this is a Padre lineup that will wait and will wait you out, and Gonsolin will walk you. However, his first start against the Padres, 5 innings pitch, scoreless ball. Lugo, who, correct me if I'm wrong, boys, he's made that full-time transition now with the Padres from reliever to full-time starter, and he's been very, very good. You look into his numbers. I was digging a little bit deeper today, even FIP and others. They support his stats this year. He's been a bright spot for a team in the Padres that hasn't been very good. The one thing you know about the Padres, they hit right-handers, and they specifically hit right-handers that throw curveballs. That's what Lugo does 33% of the time. The Dodgers scored 21 runs over the weekend, 3 games, 21 runs. These two teams, the Dodgers and Padres, you got a total of 9.5. I can find a 9 juiced up, which I'll bet. These two teams, Amal Shaw averaged 12 runs per over the weekend. I'm not afraid to go over the nine here.
I would agree with you. And you look at it, you mentioned Tony the Tiger. He's a 4-5 inning guy for this team. We know the Dodgers bullpens have had tremendous struggles. Now, Lugo's pitched well in 6 of his last 8 starts, but I think both teams should be fairly effective offensively. And for whatever reason, the Dodgers seem to have great success against the Padres specifically. It seems like you see it time after time in a series. The Dodgers might be trailing. They come from behind. They did it on Friday night. On Saturday, the Padres put up a 7-run spot in the, I think it was the 8th inning. And then yesterday, the Dodgers scored 6 runs in the first 2 innings. That game is over against Rich Hill. But I tend to agree with you, Patrick. Despite Seth Lugo pitching effectively and with Tony Gonsolin on the mound, I think it should be an offensive game. Day game at Petco. Ball tends to carry a little bit more. We saw that. You got to be very cognizant of that. Of this with certain ballparks in baseball. Oakland, and especially on the West Coast, Oakland, Anaheim was a lower scoring game yesterday, but the Padres, Dodgers, day games, these balls tend to fly out. I mean, when do the A's score 8 runs against anybody? They beat the Giants yesterday 8-6 at home.
The one thing the Padres do, they're patient at the plate. They will walk. Gonsolin will walk you. Again, we're showing 9.5. I got $1.25 on over the 9. We go to the big guy. And Amal, just quickly with you again. There's a team that you were talking about. You're like, dude, I can't understand how this team keeps winning. And we'll get into a little bit of recap. Some of those that we were surprised by, i.e. the Marlins, have started to fall apart. I mean this. And they've got talent. I get it. But the Dodgers are what? 64-46. That's a team. Robert should get some credit. He's dealt masterfully with that rotation that's been banged up. They continue to win against a team that spent tons of money in the Padres. They dominated 7-2 on this 7-2 on the series as far as the season's concerned. This Dodger team just keeps on rolling.
They really do, and they're going to be dangerous. Right now, they're 6.5 back of Atlanta in terms of the best record in the National League. You know, we've been talking about how well Atlanta's played all year long, but if the Atlanta Braves go into a tailspin like we've seen Cincinnati go into, or the Arizona Diamondbacks, including the Mets, those three teams have all lost 6 in a row. I would not be surprised at all if we see this Dodgers team make a push here in the last, say 7 weeks to be able to make a run at the best record in baseball. They're going to win this division. Right now, they've got a 4-game lead over the Giants. More importantly, 5 in the loss column. The Giants are playing well, but not good enough compared to what LA is playing. And you see it reflected in the price. There was an opportunity, Patrick, in late June, early July, to take a shot with the Dodgers when they were trailing the Diamondbacks. You felt like Arizona would have a little bit of a drop off, but now the Diamondbacks are 1 game over 500.
Yep. Well put. They've struggled. Big guy, this number is steamy like you coming out of the sauna. I mean, we got a 115 opener up to 142 over at DraftKings behind Lugo. He does get that 6th day of rest. Last time out, I think he threw over 100 pitches, so he's got an extra day here. If you wanted to convince me of the Padres, you had to get the number before. You've lost the best of it. But again, we're showing 9.5. You can find a 9. Where you at?
The Los Angeles Dodgers are recession-proof. In any economy, they can win. And wouldn't it be something, guys, if in today's world, where everyone else spent, like you mentioned, and they kind of scaled it back, if somehow this team wins a 162 season World Series, this game's pretty easy for me. I only want to back one of two bets. It's either the Dodgers or it's either the Dodgers team total. Seth Lugo's day ERA, 4.38. His night ERA, 2.88. For whatever reason, not that good in the during the day. Maybe he doesn't get enough sleep. Don't know what it is. I could use more of it. And also, Seth Lugo, he's had a pretty good run of late. You guys mentioned it. But that's what happens when you face Colorado, Pittsburgh, and Detroit 3 straight on the schedule. Makes life a little bit easier for the pitcher. I actually like Seth Lugo. I wanted the Mets to retain him. But in this matchup, I can only think about the plus price, $1.20 on the Dodgers, or I'm seeing where I can get plus 102 on over 4.5 for LA. I think that might end up being my bet here.
Yeah, I'm showing even money. Great job. Recession proof. A little economics from the big guy as he starts to break out of that bad mood. Okay, so I think we're pretty much in line here. And you mentioned the Padres, who, again, if you watched over the weekend, actually last night it was here in Los Angeles. For those that don't know, Amal, you and I on Friday were talking about this during the break. One of the catastrophes across sports and programming, the fact that Los Angeles Dodgers fans can't watch Dodger baseball. When I want to watch a Dodgers game, I got to go to the bar. I won't get into the semantics of it and all the specifics, but it's a ridiculous notion. Now, last night was the ESPN game of the night, so I got to watch it. And what I took from it was bury the Padres. They gone.
I disagree with you from this standpoint. You look at
you love this team.
He loves the schedule.
Can't quit him.
Loves the schedule.
Can't quit him. Loves it.
You guys are right on the scheduling thing. I say that about everybody, so you're not wrong on that. That's why I'm laughing. But the Cubs, the Marlins have lost four in a row. The Diamondbacks have lost six in a row. The Cincinnati Reds, who are currently the third wild card team, have lost six in a row. This team is not out of contention. The Dodgers are the one team they seem to have difficulties with. Look, they win the game today. They split the weekend series. We know they're not catching the Dodgers for the division, but we saw what they're capable of last year in the postseason. All I'm saying is if they get in this thing, watch out. They're going to be dangerous. And we all, to a certain extent, expected the Reds, the Marlins, and the Diamondbacks to have some sort of fall off. I don't know if we expected to be this precipitous, but these teams are not ones that you feel confident in backing to make that third wild card spot.
Yeah, I mean, again, we were talking about some of the positives last week, and obviously the negatives. You start New York with the Mets. You start New York with the Yankees. The big guys, White Sox. And then I would say the Padres, because the middling, you know, it's not necessarily they've been terrible. It's just there's never been that spark. You know, it's interesting. A team like the Phillies, who will win seven straight, drop four, then go on another seven-game win streak. With the Padres, it's just been, really has been no juice. Right, big guy?
Yeah. Look, this organization's now proven twice that just assembling the most talented roster doesn't mean anything in baseball. The Mets learned that lesson, but the Padres, this is their second time doing it. Remember, they did it with Kimbrel and the Upton brothers and
all sorts of other pieces.
Hold on a second. If you include the Upton brothers in that conversation, that's already a problem to begin with.
But they did. No, they spent big money when Preller first got there. When he first got to San Diego, he spent big money on big tickets and they freaking fell apart. Kind of the same vibe here. They traded for Soto at the trade deadline last year. There's a lot to be determined moving into next year as well with this team.
Yeah, a massive failure on their part and the Angels' part and a couple other teams to not sell off pieces for next year. Really, really bad calculations.
Well, I don't agree with you on the Padres. On the Angels' part, not trading away Shohei Ohtani could be one of the worst decisions we've ever seen in the history of baseball.
Amal, the Padres are horrible at baseball. They stink.
What is today, August 7th, 8th? I'm going to tell you right now, this team's making the playoffs.
They stink. They're bad at the game.
Oh, stop it. You know what you are? You're a prideful Indian man. You are a prideful man. And he is standing on pride. He's tall enough, but he got taller because he just stood on a whole mountain of pride, which is made up of crap. When we return, college football, they're calling it realignment. It's consolidation in the Big 12. Next, Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, you want to get in on the fantasy action, but sick of managing your roster, sick of player injuries, ending your season. With Best Ball on DraftKings, you get the best of your team all season long. This year, Best Ball on DraftKings is bigger than ever with $10 million in guaranteed cash prizes up for grabs. Company's doing well. For a limited time, you can join DraftKings' largest Best Ball contest ever and get your first entry back in DraftKings dollars as soon as the draft is finished. Act now before this offer expires. To start playing Best Ball, download the DraftKings app using the code SHARP, S-H-A-R-P. Enter DraftKings Best Ball Millionaire Contest and snake draft your team for the season. Each week, you'll automatically rack up points from all your top scorers. No ads, no drops, no trades, no, hey, Amal, I should have played him instead. Teams with the most points by the end of the season will have a shot to take home $1 million in the top prize. What are you waiting for? Head over to DraftKings. Use that code SHARP. Gambling problem, 1-800-GAMBLER. One per customer. Opt-in required with $10 entry fee. Bonus issued as $10 DK dollars. Age and eligibility restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. See DraftKings.com/promotions for details. As we get you back here, coming off a weekend, Sharp Money. I'm Patrick Maher, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson. So you should have seen me. I was dressed on Saturday in my Sunday best, waiting for the Evite. It never came. And listen, I love our boss, John Goulet, the Frenchman. Love the guy. Gianna, the beautiful one-year-old. She turned one on Saturday, and John Goulet had a party for his lovely daughter and invited the whole entire staff. Amal Shaw was there.
He was wearing
water wings. He was wearing, you know, those wingies just on both arms. He was wearing those. The big guy came with a snorkel. I was the only person that didn't get an invite. Did you guys hear the drama? Like, Goulet just completely ignored me.
I didn't get an invitation either.
You did.
You think I'm making stuff? I did not.
Yeah, but here's the thing. People know not to invite Amal to things after he established on the show that even at Sapphires, if he's invited anywhere, he just shows up for 15 minutes and leaves.
Yeah, but he'll make an appearance.
Yeah, but is he going to give a gift if he's staying 15 minutes?
I can tell you right now, unequivocally, I give better gifts than anybody that showed up.
Is he going to eat some of the food?
I bought Gianna an American Girl. Like, I don't know what to do with this doll that I got her. I was just literally, I assumed.
they still make American Girls?
I don't know. I had an Uber ready to take me from Hermosa to Vegas, and it never came. I'm not bitter. I'm just saying. I had hoped to come to the party. I wanted to hang out with Pauly.
If you bought her for her first birthday an American Girl, could you buy me a Russian Girl for my birthday, if you know what I mean?
I think you're taking care of that yourself. Well, happy birthday to Gianna. 1 year old. Beautiful. Okay.
Well, fun fact about Gianna. Fun fact is I gave a gift. I gave a fake iPad. Like, it's not a real – it's a toy one that makes noises. But I couldn't put a card in with my gift because, fun fact, I did not know the name of John Goulet, our boss's child, until everyone gathered to sing happy birthday.
So wouldn't common sense tell you to send a text to John and say – hey, I apologize. Could you just please give me your daughter's first name?
He said her name so many times to me, and I don't listen when people speak to me.
Oh, good.
That so it would have been more offensive to tell him that I wasn't listening.
I'm so happy he said that, Patrick. So from now on, anything that gets talked about on our morning calls, I could just deny because he wasn't listening.
Well, here's the thing. As you get to know him, you'll understand Dustin Sweetelson is a narcissist.
100%.
And he doesn't necessarily focus nor care about what other people are saying. Nope. He's waiting to talk.
Yes.
That's what he does. It makes him a great host. Okay. let's get into the airplane conferences is what I'm calling them as the geographical nightmare continues across the college landscape. Amal, it was the Big Six back in the day. Then it turned into the Power Five. And now it's the Big Four as the Pac-12 with a dwindling pool of TV money is absolutely cratering before our eyes. We'll get into the impact. And Eli Drinkwitz, who is the head coach there at Missouri, had a great take, two great takes on the ancillary programs across college athletics as well. Now, I kind of thought about this morning, and Amal, tell me if you think I'm wrong here. This kind of started in 2012 when two teams bailed on the Big 12, that being Missouri and Texas A&M. I'm sorry. Missouri and Texas A&M never felt like the SEC to me. And it's like, you know, it's 2012, so it feels like it's in the rear view a little bit. But that was kind of the beginning where you saw people kind of grasping for geography and grasping for a future place in the future of the landscape that is college athletics. Just quickly, and I'll let you run with it. The Big Ten, of course, broke the geography and broke the map with UCLA last year. And, of course, USC announcing they were coming to the Midwest as far as the Big Ten's concerned. And then Oregon and Washington on Friday agreed in principle to join. So, again, I can't wait. I know you can't wait either for Washington, Indiana on an early Saturday. That's what everybody's pining for. The Big 12, they re-added Colorado last week or 2 weeks ago. And then over the weekend or Friday accepted apps from Arizona State, and Utah. The Pac-12 now is the Pac-4, fellas. It's Cal, Oregon State, Stanford, and Washington State. Why are they left? Nobody wants them. Nobody cares about those four. And it's interesting because the Pac-12, while it crumbles, Amal, it's always been a little bit of an outsider looking in as far as the Power Five because they focus a lot on Olympic sports.
Yep.
They put a lot of time and concern and finances into other sports. It's not just the SEC in college football and then a little pittance in college baseball. It's always been kind of one of those leagues that did its own thing. And it's kind of sad to see it kind of crumbling before our eyes here.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Very well stated in terms of A&M and Missouri making that move. I think that changed the dynamics of what we saw in college athletics. Then, of course, you see Texas and Oklahoma also eventually get over to the SEC.
Yep.
No surprise by the Big Ten in terms of getting those two Los Angeles teams. I get Oklahoma and Texas adds value to the SEC, But getting UCLA and USC, two globally renowned universities, not only just for athletics, but athletically, really is a big coup for the Big Ten. You get the second largest television market in the country. You get that fertile recruiting ground of Southern California. It makes it a little bit easier to recruit to your conference when you're now going to be playing in that conference. Oregon came as a surprise to me. Washington academically and athletically are two ideal programs for the Big Ten, not geographically. But the one that surprised me the most is Stanford being on the outside looking in. I think Cal, because they had taken such a tumultuous fall in football and in basketball over the last decade, doesn't come as much of a surprise. And then Oregon State, Washington State, I was reading about these two schools. They could be teams that could be heading to the Mountain West. Currently, they're making $30 million a year from the Pac-12. That's a huge blow, Patrick, when you start to look at the ancillary sports outside of women's softball, women's basketball, and men's basketball, and, of course, football. It really becomes more difficult, as you, I like the way you said it, so aptly put. Olympic sports, I think you'll see start to fall by the wayside. I've always felt like if collegiate athletics, if the sport could not be fiscally sustaining itself, it probably shouldn't exist. And I understand because of Title IX, you have to have the same number of male and female scholarships. But I think some of the smaller sports at Washington State and Oregon State, unfortunately, are going to go by the wayside. Nobody, let's be real here. Nobody cares about Corvallis. Nobody cares about Pullman. Pullman might be the toughest place in college athletics to get to out of the Power Five. And so this is tough on them. The big one is Stanford. Remember when they used to have the Capital One and the Sears Director Cup trophy for the best athletic performance by a university per calendar year? Stanford dominated that. And now this is a world-renowned institution that's on the outside looking in.
Well put. And Amal, the one team that makes sense if you're in your 40s is Washington to the Big Ten because of all those battles in the Rose Bowl. Remember, yep. Washington, old Don James. Remember, I think it was 91 they went 12-0. Did they split with Miami that year? But I remember them playing Michigan yep. in the Rose Bowl because that was a big deal back then. The Rose Bowl was the granddaddy of them all. You remember Desmond Howard and Elvis Gerbach and I think it was Tyrone Wheatley at the time. Like, Washington popped for a while there.
Oh, listen, the Dogfather had a role in Steve Ettman. Napoleon Kaufman, they had some absolute dudes on those teams. I mean, Washington's defense was unbelievable when you go to the early 90s and how great they were. You mentioned that winning a national championship. By the way, also, Husky Stadium is really one of the great. You talked about beautiful. It going out there. Forget the aesthetics. But in terms of home field advantage, the scary thing when you're up in Seattle at Husky Stadium is if you're in the second deck and when it's rolling, the deck is shaking. You're a little bit concerned.
It's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it really is awesome. But I think when you look at college athletics, and the one thing I misspoke on Friday, I thought Carolina and these two schools might be ones that eventually wind up in the Big Ten. They've got a clause that does not allow them to leave the ACC without paying a substantial amount of money, I believe, until 2035 or 2036. So that's a long ways away. But if you're one of these programs in the ACC, I think big picture, you've got to pay the money and go to where the money's going to be. The Big Ten, because of the geographic footprints, they're different than the SEC. When you look at Mississippi State, you've got two teams in state. You look at some of these other conferences, Alabama, Auburn. You've got multiple teams within the state. Ohio State, Michigan's the only one in the Big Ten that I can think of besides Indiana where you've got multiple teams in the state. Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, Penn State. These are all standalone programs, the flagship programs within their respective states. So you're always going to have eyeballs on those schools. And I think if you're Carolina, Virginia, if you could move to the Big Ten academically, athletically, it would be a huge boon for them.
Big guy in them all. Can I course correct really quickly? I had in my notes to start the Pac-12 conversation. I really did. And I liked my headline I wrote down. I wrote down Dustin Sweetelson, lights out for Pac-12 after dark.
That's a great line. Bad. That's a great line.
I'm not a writer. That's not look at
I
he
like it.
It.
I like it. It.
Now,
I approve.
The new power conference in college basketball is the Big 12. We'll discuss and come back and talk Big 12 football next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
It's football season. Can't freaking wait. And bettors know that this is when the money is made. Nobody knows football like VSIN, and now is the time to become a VSIN subscriber. A lot of new subscribers with the College Football Betting Guide, a lot of happy subscribers because the picks were hitting over the weekend as well. Remember, when you sign up, you get the free picks every single day. Only VSIN subscribers get all the tools prep for the college and pro football seasons. Sign up today for $199. If it seems like a lot, I assure you, the value will 10x. You'll receive both guides and full VSiN access all the way through the Super Bowl. Or you can try the $19 for your first month and see everything VSiN has to offer to up your betting game. $19, give it a shot. I think you'll stick around. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe for all your options and become part of the Sports Betting Network. Got your back? Prince, Amal Shaw. I'm Patrick Maher. Dustin Sweetelson feeling a little bit better. Ryan Harris is going to join Westwood One CBS Sports. We're talking Notre Dame coming up in 14 minutes. Brett Coleman, the guy has like an absolute huge following on social. He is the NFL dude. He used to join us all the time on our old show, Big Guy, the Film Room on YouTube. He's going to join talking NFL. Zach Barnett, footballscoop.com, college football as well. Amal, as we were going to break, I mentioned, you know, the Pac-12 being eliminated, or right now, certainly there isn't a Power Five, and probably the conference is going to go away altogether. So that means you now have one undisputed king of college basketball, and that is the Big 12. Pound for pound, they've been the leader in recent years. As a matter of fact, KenPom had the Big 12 as far as a conference over the last 10 years, eight of those 10 years as his number one conference to end the year. They won two of the last three national championships. Arizona's on the way. Houston, remember, is on the way. The Big 12 is going to be a monster in college hoops.
Yeah, I've always thought it's the best conference over the last half a dozen years, and now you just add two with the acquisition of Arizona coming in next year. You mentioned Houston coming in this year. It's going to be unbelievable. I mean, think about some of these road trips you have to go on. To Colorado, I know people don't think of Colorado as a college basketball school, but Tad Boyle's done a great job there with his team, particularly at home. You're playing in altitude. Then going to McHale Center, playing at the Fog. I mean, this is going to be unbelievable. Play down at the Fertitta Center in Houston. It is going to be you're going to see teams from the Big 12 that have 10, 11 losses getting into the NCAA tournament in conference play.
Absolutely. Big guy, you didn't get a chance. I want to start talking because we kind of discussed the Big 12 on Friday. I really want to go into Texas and Oklahoma and Kansas State. You didn't get a chance to jump in on consolidation. Did you have a minute on it you wanted to give?
I just blame the Longhorn Network for all of this, and it's kind of ironic that the Longhorn Network no longer exists. But none of this would have happened had that not started to get the ball rolling in, 2011? And now we're here because of it, and Texas and Oklahoma and the SEC, and who knows who's leading the Big 12 when those were the two teams that were the hallmarks of that conference forever? Like, I don't know. I'm still bitter over it. Like, I still can't get over it. I'm still annoyed by it. I do think there are a lot of teams out there, though, that still haven't capitalized on the potential movement. Like, I want to see what my Miami Hurricanes do. I want to see what some of these other teams, what the plan is. I know they have to pay a lot of money to leave the league they're in. But to me, if I'm Florida State, leaving the ACC where I'm like second or third dog, I'd rather go be the king of the Big 12. And Amal mentioned having a school from that league in your state. UCF's there already for Florida State. It makes perfect sense. Go be the number one football team in the Big 12.
Okay.
Would you go ahead, Amal? No, I was just thinking what Dustin said. I was thinking more SEC for the Florida State Seminoles, but it actually makes sense.
I don't want to compete with the SEC.
Why, though? Because I think when Nick Saban retires at Alabama, I think they've got a great shot to be right there, the program that they were in the 80s and 90s.
I'd rather be the king of one league than constantly clawing my way in the top three in another league.
Well, Texas thought that when they went to when the Big Eight became the Big 12, they thought they're going to be the king of the hill.
True.
And they didn't do anything for a long, long time, minus 1 year.
Do either of you have an update on Florida State? Because I haven't heard.
No, they were talking nothing concrete as of yet.
No, they're trying to get that Saudi money.
I'm telling you, you guys sleep. The Saudi money's coming. And I just want to say, and I think that Mr. Robbins and Mr. Mead and the whole entire crew would back me up on this. If they want to start just piping some money into DK, into VSiN, we'll take it. I mean, look, politics aside, it's green. Well, so let's take I'll stay away.
No, you're
let's
good.
Go
but I just want to say, listen, politics is all about money. Why wouldn't we take it?
Yeah, what's dirty? What's clean? I don't know. We could rinse it. Big 12 should move on. The Big 12, and again, as I said on Friday, whatever that means, because right now it's constituted of 14 teams. And the two in the top tier, Texas and Oklahoma. Big guy, can you do me a favor and get updated numbers over at DraftKings as far as the conference for the Big 12? And also, I want to know Texas's win total. I had them at 9.5. If you wanted to go over that 9.5 them all, you got to pay juice, so they're headed to 10 of minus 140. I'll say this, you and I always kill Sarkisian, but the team on paper is there. I mean, the preseason expectations, they just never meet them, but they're sky high. But the expectations this year should be met because the team is freaking loaded. Quinn Ewers held off a challenge for the starting job in the spring. He's going to be throwing to very good wide receivers, which you can get into. That huge tight end, Jatavion Sanders. All five starters return across the offensive front. You take a look at the odds in conference. Texas is even money. Is it 9.5, big guy? I know you're sipping on that iced tea. Is it 9.5 still at 140 on the season regular season win total for Texas?
Yep, over minus 140 on 9.5. The under plus $1.20.
22-1, Amal, national championship. I'll ask you this way while you go into Texas. That 22-1, is it worth a sniff? Meaning, is this a team bound for the Final Four and potentially a national championship, national champion with Ewers and Sarkisian?
So it's going to contradict what I'm about to say, but I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility. If they can win at Alabama, I think the confidence will grow. Remember when LSU won the national title in 2019? They had that great win, I think 45-38 or 38-31 in Austin on a Saturday night. That kind of really propelled them the rest of the way. And I think this could be something that happens to Texas if they were to win in Tuscaloosa. However, you mentioned the 9.5, Patrick. They've got the most returning starters back in the Big 12. They've got 15 starters back. This team should be elite offensively. They do lose Bijan Robinson, but look, to me, when you look at this team overall, I like what they have. The offensive line is solid. Jonathan Brooks at the tailback position, a good sophomore tailback. He's very effective. I think this team can be very, very good. Worthy's got to be more consistent. If he's more consistent, they've got an opportunity to really do some big things. And you mentioned Jatavion Sanders. For people that are not familiar with him, he's the big zero out there. That's his jersey number. And I'll tell you something. He is an absolute monster. I know everyone's got Brock Bowers penciled in as the number one drafted tight end. It's not a lock. Bowers is about 6'4", 6'5", 230. Sanders is 6'5", and 250. This guy is a freak of nature. I mean, I'm trying to think of like Travis Kelce and some of these other guys. This guy's more athletic than almost anybody. Think of like Darnell Washington from Georgia. That's the comp I would make on him from an athletic standpoint. I think this team's got a chance to be elite. Can the offense be consistent, not turn the ball over? Ewers showed us he can be really, really good. He was the number one high school recruit coming out of South Lake Carroll in the Dallas area. And then defensively, can this team be good enough on the defensive side of the ball, Patrick? That's the one area I have a concern when you look at the Longhorns. But other than that, I think this team's got an opportunity. But the reason why I'm going to contradict myself is 22-1 is not a bad number on them to win the national title. However, I would not confidently bet 9.5 on them over. And I know it is completely opposite of what I just said, but to me, they've got some hiccup games that if the Alabama game goes awry, could cause the season to go into free fall.
Made big time strides on defense last year.
Yep.
That stud linebacker Overshown is gone. However, six starters are back. You mentioned they should be one of the better defenses in the Big 12. I know it sounds trite, but I do come back to the head coach. He's just never done anything. And I'm not talking personal stuff. I'm not about to attack Sarkisian. Everybody has their demons. I just don't think he's a very good coach. And I think in a big spot, he crumbles. Big guy?
He took over loaded programs at both USC and Washington and underachieved. I think you're spot on. He is the key piece holding this thing back. When you look at Texas, even if Quinn Ewers isn't a dude who takes the next step, they have so many other pieces around that should make it easier on a quarterback. If he's just really good, not this elite star people envision him to be, this team has so many pieces that if they play to their potential, they are a national championship caliber team. The problem is, I just don't trust that they're going to get the most out of everyone.
You guys are absolutely right. I'm looking at Sark's career numbers. Oh, you're being kind. These are elite programs he's coached at. When you think about it, Washington's a great program. USC is one of the all-time great programs, and so is Texas. And for this guy to never have double-digit wins in a season, that is mind-boggling to me. What I don't understand is we saw at USC goes 9-4 and then gets fired after going 3-2 middle of 2015. But Texas goes out and hires him, and I think they give him like a 6-year, $34 million deal. 5-7 and 8-5. Come on, give me a break.
Yeah, he went to that Saban rehab. It's unbelievable. It really is. I mean, coaches across college football should have been up in arms when he got Texas.
Yes.
I'm not talking Colorado State. He got. I'm not talking Houston. He got Texas. That's a top six program. Sarkisian just slides in after hanging out with Nikki. We're coming back, Notre Dame.